morning, honorable members, and good morning, the Department of Defense. I will start without much ado introducing myself, and the members will follow you. I'm the co-chairperson of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense and Military Veterans, Musa Wenkosi Mlambo, in the NCOP. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Michalakis. I am a permanent delegate to the NCOP for the Free State Province.
Shahid Issa, member of the Joint Standing Committee from the NA.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Lamini, permanent delegate in the NCOP representing the most beautiful province, Mpumalanga.
Good morning. My name is Dumisani Ximbi, permanent delegate from the Western Cape in the NCOP, member of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense and Military Veterans.
Dumelang bagaetsho. Ke nna teko itsile motlhashupeng. Ke tswa ko Bokone Bophirima.
Good morning. My name is Moses Titus Mhlanga, permanent delegate from Mpumalanga, member.
Morning, Chair and members of the department. I'm Dumisani Kamete, member of this committee.
Thank you very much. Can the staff also introduce themselves and those that are in the room behind our staff members?
I'm Peter Daniels. I'm the content advisor for the two defense committees.
Calvin Mangani, content advisor for this committee.
Yes.
My name is Hector. I'm from PNG.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Christopher, and I'm representing 7-8. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Bonga. I'm from the media from ENCA.
Thank you very much. Over to the department. The leader of the team, General Yengene.
Thank you, Chair. First, myself, I'm Lieutenant General Yengene, the Chief of Human Resources for the Department of Defense, and I'm with General Nodola, who is the Chief Director for a transformation in the Department of Defense to take care of all these matters that the committee wants to hear about demographics, representations, and all that. But the committee chair had a request that there must be representation from the services. That is why you see we are a little bit larger delegation today. In the front row, in the same order from General Nodola, please, General Nodola, will you stand up? That is General Nodola, who will do the presentation, Chairperson. From the Army, representing the Army, will be General Fongota. From the South African Air Force will be General Smith. From the South African Navy will be General Admiral Masanabo. And from South African Medical Health Services will be General Ndaba. The rest of the people, Chair, behind me, I don't know if it is really necessary to introduce, because they are really not the main role players, but just the general staff. Thank you, sir.
We would like them to introduce themselves then.
Okay. Admiral, starting from you in that order. Thank you.
Thanks for promotion, sir. It's Captain Murake, SA Navy.
Thank you, sir. It's Brigadier General Snowy Moremi, Director of Social Work. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm General Mavumbe, the Director of Transformation Management in the South. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm Colonel Kumalo, Senior Staff Officer Transformation in the Army.
Good morning, sir. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Hartsley from Transformation Management under General Ndola.
Morning, sir. Colonel Fenter from the Office of General Ndola.
Good morning, sir. Colonel Richard from the Personal Staff Officer to Lieutenant General Yengeni.
From the Minister.
Morning, Chairperson. Peter Ngavin, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Minister of Defense.
Morning, Regime Marimi, Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Office of the Sector.
Sisboye.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members, Department and colleagues. I'm Bulelo Matigane, Committee Secretary. Thank you.
There's a lady who has just come in. Can you introduce yourself, please? Thank you very much. Can we start with a presentation? And can we keep it short, 20 minutes max? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We'll try to be short. The aim of the presentation is to present to the Joint Standing Committee on Defense the transformation status of the SANDF. Good morning, all honorable members. Now I'll come to the scope. We'll have the introduction that entails the strategy, the transformation strategy, transformation end state, population trends, gender distribution, female representation, representativity in the SMS level, current equity status per service, challenges of women during extended foreign deployment, accommodation of women in operational units, accommodation of people with disability in the DoD, the well-being of soldiers, that is in terms of health, training, discipline, and discipline, equipment and condition of workplace, and then after we discuss. I'm not sure if maybe the first two, that is the transformation strategy and the end state that we have to present at this present moment, because I'm being given 20 minutes. Maybe if we can just zoom in, with your permission, zoom in to the population trend. With your permission, sir.
No, it's fine, for as long as whatever that you won't be zooming in will be at least delivered to us. It's us who should be able to say, now this is enough. If you understand what I meant, General.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay, maybe let me just go straight to the transformation intended strategic intent. That we are trying to build human capital through transformation and empowerment programs, national and international events. Gender and disability mainstreaming is part of our strategy. We have policies that depict exactly what we want in the gender mainstreaming as accordance to the government imperative. We intend to rejuvenate the SANDF through the youth development,
it should have we should have accountability, monitoring of progress and evaluation. We do have such a mechanism that is monitoring the progress in the defense force. We have in the transformation structures, we have intervention structures, we have structures that deals with the diversity, structures that deals with the equity status, and transformation is embedded in all spheres of the DoD and is a line function of all the commanders. Transformation end state. We envisage that transformation of the military goes beyond the gender, race, and disability representativity. It further includes the transformation of structures, military equipment, training, capabilities to adapt to the ever-changing environment and to ensure a mission-ready workforce that is transformed in its leadership style, culture, mindset, attitude, and behavior as it is required by the Constitution. It also involves constant evaluation of military policies, procedures, processes with regard to the current and future situations in order to ensure continuous improvement on the way we do our business. We come to the population trends, distribution trends. As we know that in 1994, we had integration of seven forces, seven non-stat forces and one non-statutory forces. Ever since that time, the population distribution of the SANDF changed. In 1994 to 1995, the population, that is Africans, they were 31,628. Whites were 37,080. Colors were 12,980. And Indians were 834. In 2004 to 2005 financial year, we have seen a growth of with the Africans at 48,562, whites were 17,675, colors were 9,729, and Indians went to 1,004.
Can you hold on? Yes, honorable member.
I'm missing the figures that she's reading. I don't know whether it's my presentation.
No, you are correct. We don't have that on our presentation.
Yes, sir, it's not there, but it's there in the graph down there. It's there. If you look at the graph, you can see how it goes.
No, still it does not talk to what?
Yes.
Sorry,
yeah, it's the stats, the distribution, it's the graph of the distribution that shows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, sorry, Chair, can I intervene, General Nodola? I think it's a very valid question because it is really confusing if people do not have those notes because you are reading,
okay,
because you are reading your own notes. So I propose, Chair, that she sticks to the presentation as it is, appears on the screen. Thank you.
Yeah, the proposal is sustained because now we see percentages and we are talking numbers. You see. So can you stick to the presentation? Thank you very much.
Okay, the year 15, financial year 15-16, we see that we have grown up till, now I don't have the thing, the green this thing, it's it goes to 72% of the African. That is African. Then white, the above 10%. That is no, the above 40. No. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong one now. I'm at the beginning. Then the
general. It seems as if this presentation was not well prepared, because you must be able to talk to those percentages as you present them. But once you start to stammer, they're giving us a very serious problem.
Okay, sir, the whites, they are at 11% at this present moment. And then the colored, they are just below 10%. And then the Indians are in 2% at this present moment.
Honorable Member Motelakis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, if you count all of it together, it should give you 100%, because they all make up 100% of the Defence Force together. I also don't think it's fair to the committee to look at the graph, because the graph is a bit skewed. It's difficult to just guess the percentages. Can't we, the General gave us figures initially, can't we just at least have the final 2015-2016 figures for the different racial groups instead of the percentages? We can always work out the percentages ourselves, but I mean, to have the figures will give us a more accurate idea than guessing the percentages at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we are correct, Honorable Member Michalakis. We are welcome, Honorable Boy. Can we speak to 15-16 so that we can have progress, General? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The numbers as requested, Africans are at 57,243. Whites are at 10,028. Colors are at 9,595. Indians are at 926. That is the number. The gender distribution trends in the Defence Force. We see that the females are at 30%. That is the total, both civilians and uniform members. They are at 30%. That is in this current financial year. That is 15-16. It should be taken into account that this presentation hasn't changed ever since the first preparation that we made, because we haven't had promotions ever since the beginning of the year. It's usually done during this time. At the beginning of next year, we'll see the total change of the gender distribution in the Defence Force. Not sure if maybe members wanted numbers, or we can just continue with the percentage.
No, you can continue. Members will ask questions during question time.
The current distribution at the SMS level in the Department of Defense: uniform members we are at, as the females are at 18%, and then the civilian employees, they are at 38%. That is the female only. And when they are combined, both of them, they are at 30%, if we combine the whole DOD. Gender representation at SMS level per service. In the previous slide, we have seen the total gender representation in the whole SNDF, that is the uniform members. But then here, we said we are going to concentrate on the women that are at the each service that are in the decision making, and we didn't include the women that are in other are in divisions, because the Defence Force is divided into divisions and the services. We have four arm of services, that is the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and the SAMS. So here I'm dealing with only women that are in those services, and we included the women that are in the divisions in the main slide. So we'll start with the chart pie chart on the that is on the race, that we have Africans, that is at the SMS level in the Army. There are 18 Africans. That makes African 18 women, and then the colors are 5. That is at the SMS level. That is at the level of Brigadier General to Major General. Whites, there are 10, and Indians, there is 1. Gender. We have 12%, that makes it, we have 4 females in the environment of the Army. The Air Force, the females, all in all, it's there is 14 Africans, 1 colored, 7 males, 7 whites, and 0 Indians. In the gender, on the gender side, is that we have 3 females that are in the decision making at the Air Force. That they make 14%. Navy, Africans are 9, colors are 3, whites are 8, and 1 Indian. In terms of gender now, versus male versus females, there are 3 females in the whole of Navy that are taking decisions, that are serving under the service itself. SAMS, we have 15 Africans, 2 colors, 4 whites, and 0 Indians. In terms of gender, we have 7 females that are serving in the SAMS. Then we come to the challenges facing the females during the extended deployment. We acknowledge that the deployment in the previous years was 6 months, and it was increased to 1 year. And there are several challenges that females specifically face during this extended deployment. Firstly, we have a problem with sustainment, a challenge with sustainment, which is not of which we rely on the chartered flights, and the postal services is not really reliable. So that means our people are not receiving the support from home due to this postal and the chartered flight to the mission areas. And then we experience overutilization of available troops, which has a serious family social implications. And then we find that the troops cannot be deployed as a cohesive unit because we have to incorporate, whenever we have to deploy, we have to get some other troops from other environments. And under this, the challenges, we have started visiting the internal deployment areas to find out exactly firsthand what is the problem that is happening in the deployment area in terms of females. Then in the next future, in the next financial year, we are going to visit the external deployment, where we are going to be talking about the UN Resolution 1325 and UN Resolution 1820 and sexual exploitation and abuse, including harassment. Accommodation of females in the operational areas. In all the operational units, there are separate sleeping quarters and ablution for females and males. Facilities are of communal nature. It's the lecture rooms, dining rooms, and sporting facilities. The status of the SANDF buildings is a challenge to all members, irrespective of gender. We in the Defense Force decided to form to establish a DoD work regiment in order to address these challenges of the buildings that are no longer of standard. So hoping that this work regiment is going to speed up the process of renovating the units that we are deliberated. Accommodation of people with a disability. At this present moment, we have 440 people with disability. Maybe I should highlight that these are the only ones that have disclosed their status. And then out of the 440, 341 are uniform members and 99 are PSEP members. We have a DoD Disability Committee, which has representatives from different services and divisions that was established to promote, protect, and develop and attain equal opportunities for people with disabilities. The DoD strives to provide individualized, reasonable accommodation for members with disability in terms of their work environment. That is, we have barriers for free access, courses that they are accepted on courses. For each and every course, there should be a person or people with disabilities. The transport is afforded to the people with disability. in the workplace itself, those who are working in the offices, they have assistive devices with the Curamas on our side assisting us. That is the non-profitable organization. Assist us with the adapting of personal vehicles, adapting of the loose of the bathrooms in their homes, building the ramps in their homes, and other requirements that they have which needs to be done by Curamas. We have enabled the hearing impaired people with access to communication, and we have successfully trained few junior senior sign language interpreters. So far we have 9 of them, and we have 9 of them at this present moment. We say in order to adhere to government imperative, people with disabilities are encouraged to declare their disability status. This is kept in our database so that we know exactly how many people do we have with disability. However, we have a problem, we have a challenge where people with invisible disabilities do not declare. We have, we conduct empowerment workshops with the DODs, with the instructors, to enable them to successfully manage the careers of the people with disability. We strive to ensure that we provide accessible accommodation to people with disability. I've already alluded to the willingness of the people with invisible disability, that we cannot force them to declare if they feel that they do not want their status to be known. The well-being of soldiers. At this juncture, I will request Brigadier General Ndaba to tell us about the status of the SANDF in terms of health. Thank you very much. I will come back after the second slide. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Chair. The health status of the SANDF, we categorize them in two, which is a medical classification. Health status. The SANDF, it's a medical classification. It goes as ground duties, and it goes as geographical area. The ground duties, they go with G, and the geographical, they go with K. So it goes as G1, which is fit, and then it is allocated the geographical area where the member will be able to execute, which is G1, K1. So those who are G1, K1, they are fit, deployable in any operational area. And then G2 with the mild condition, and then it's categorized with G2, K1, I will explain why G2, K1, it can be a primary hypertension, which is well
stabilized, we find that the candidate has just got one off of medication. So G3, it's physical limitation. It goes with G3, K2. So those ones, we deploy them internal deployments because they require a primary health care. And the G4, now it goes with administrative duties only because it goes with K3. That is unfit for the field duty only. So now the duties, they must be in the base area. And they require a secondary health care. It can be a base medical hospital. The GT, it's temporary unfit, and then it goes with K4. We cannot deploy such people because now they require a hospital and a specialized, which is tertiary, which has got all the specialists. A GP, we talk about a permanently unfit. The GP, it also goes with a short space of time where we require some of the investigations. If he has found that he's got more than 4 of the diseases while doing the char, so we wait for 6 months so that we can find out if can they be able to be part of the force. The SNDF brought health status. This is the concurrent health assessment. We're not going to be discussing the financial year of 08 and 09, as we all have the document, it was 65%. This includes the military skills development system. So from the financial year of 2014/15, we went to 67%. The 2015 and 16, 75. This year, January, it still remains the same until the 30th of September 2016. In this chart, which is concurrent health status, most of the general sitting here, we do not do it because it's mainly for the external deployment. And we do a VIP medical, which is not in here. Thank you.
Thank you, General Ndaba. As we all know that in the Defense Force, we do have discipline challenges. In the past, we had, or even now, we still have a Military Discipline Supplementary Measures Act, that is Act 16 of 1999, which disempowers the commanders to enforce discipline. to their subordinates. How does it disempowers them? Is that they are not allowed to discipline unless if to discipline anybody unless a person pleads guilty. Before that, if the person does not plead guilty, so that means the person must be referred to the courts, in the military courts, which prolongs the process, and the person stays in the base without being charged. So as a solution to this challenge, the DOD has drafted a military disciplinary bill in order to empower the commanders to enforce discipline according to the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. This disciplinary bill is still with the state law advisor and will thereafter be served to the parliament. Maybe if I may say that it has been there for the last 3 years. So I'm pleading to the to your good office to assist us so that we can ensure that our this disciplinary bill is looked is being processed up to the parliament. The equipment and the equipment in the DOD, we have problems with the maintenance. We have a backlog of maintenance on the prime mission equipment. Some of our equipment are obsolete. We have very, very limited renewal on landward prime mission equipment, which lead to high cost of keeping all system operational. We have a medical equipment which requires attention. We have hope that with the defense review, we will be in a position to address the above challenges we have in terms of our main equipment, prime equipment, mission equipment. We know that our defense review, we have said the year, financial year 16 to 17 is when we have to arrest the decline, meaning that we need urgent funding, of which we all know that there is a problems with the budget cuts all over the defense, all over the government department. Come to conditions of workplace. As you know that up till now, the public works was responsible for the maintenance of our buildings. And we, at this present moment, we have some buildings that are OHS risk. And the DOD works regiment, as it was established, was to ensure that we have they maintain our return our facilities to the required standard. At this present moment, we feel that in some other instances, the impact is that we have litigation against the DOD because of some people that that get injured during performing their duties in such dilapidated buildings. The utilization of the DOD works regiment is will facilitate that we do not close some of the facilities because we still need those facilities. In conclusion, the implementation of the defense review, specifically the arrest of the decline, is critical to the to assist the assistance of the transformation agenda in the defense force, that we will be in a position to align with the changing environment. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, General. I'll hand over to honorable members, those who have questions, clarifications, comments. I'll start with honorable Mikelakis, followed by Umfundisi, honorable Klimbi, and honorable Boy, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just have a very short question. I'm in the NCOP, so we don't get to see the military as often as the portfolio committee. The first thing that I want to bring under your attention is that there's little point in marking this presentation at the bottom as secret if the media is privy to this meeting. So I don't know why it's marked secret, but in any case, on page 21 of your presentation, I see the figure is going up, which is good. But do I read it correctly then that only 3/4 of our soldiers are deployable outside of the borders of this country? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'd like to just address the issue of this mention made of the issue, and I know that HR takes responsibility for the human resources, which are all the soldiers, whether the PSAP or the soldiers. The issue is that I see all the figures coming through and the measures that need to be taken to actually employ or recruit the right mix of people with the right competencies and skills. And that if the race or the gender factor becomes dominant in it, do we really then employ the best? And if we do not employ the best, what measures have we put in place to develop the best? Now, when we have the MSDS program and it's been cut by more than 50%, we are undermining the very rejuvenation of the force and its own transformation. And that speaks directly to the lack of political will of the leadership and the SANDF to introduce the MEMS, to take people out of the system with the necessary exit mechanism and incentives, and to replace them with more younger, dynamic, competent people to take up the arms. And I think this is a serious question which we're all just pussyfooting about and we're not dealing with. And this is creating a further decline of the defense. The other one that we have is the issue of divisions. I think we will request as a committee that we even find a further breakdown, not only of the arms of service, but also of the actual divisions, which includes defense intelligence, logistics, military police, and others that are not mentioned. The other one is good news, is that the military judges have been appointed. We'd like to see some action on that side. But I'd say we need also the bill to be amended so that we can make the SANDF more effective to deal as a military court and to deal with the issues on hand and also with the disciplinary matters that we are facing abroad in our deployments. Coming to the deployments, I think the issue of the 6 month and 1 year, there needs to be proper studies made because we are exposing our own soldiers to other social problems and diseases. And we do know that if the HIV/AIDS is not disclosed and people are inviting prostitutes into the camps, having sexual liaisons, they are spreading disease in other countries. So who takes responsibility for that? Is it just the individual? And that is by consensual agreement between two parties, not the issue about rape and the other things. But sexual harassment, we did not get the figures. The HIV/AIDS, according to me, stands at about 25% or just under 25% in the defense. So it is a serious threat to the health and fitness of the soldier. So we'd like to have an exact figures, what are being done about it, how do we address that issue, and if we extend the deployment from 6 years to 1 year, what do we expect to happen to young men and young women? Are we being fair? Are we doing the right thing by extending the deployments, or should we be more considerate of other implications or unintended consequences of those deployments? So I think those are serious studies that need to be done and firm recommendations be made in order to protect our soldiers and our defense and also our reputation as a South African defense internationally. The other one is we have the annual defense, the National Defense Service Commission's annual report. We had a briefing about it. We know the conditions that soldiers are facing in terms of facilities, of equipment, etc., and it's pathetic. We are totally unhappy as committees. We have insisted, that's why the works formation is operating today, so that we can quick turnover in terms of building and facilities that need to be maintained, and the soldiers can live under better conditions. So it is a serious worry for us, and it deals with milestone one. So the facilities, I believe the OHS that is there, there may even be litigation. So has there been litigation before in terms of facilities that is a hazard and a threat to soldiers, and there's been a case made against this department? The other one is, of course, we spoke about the health, the sexual abuse and things that's happening abroad. The other one is the equipment. And here we speak about prime mission equipment. Equipment that is effectively used by our soldiers going into civilian problems and wars and jungle warfare. Are they going in with equipment on the leg, meaning that they are struggling to have this equipment that's supposed to be effective to protect their lives? Are we putting them at a higher risk? And if we speak about serviceability, it directly correlates to the reimbursement of the AU and UN funding. So what are we doing? To put use a pun, are we shooting ourselves in the foot? So those are serious matters that need to be addressed as a matter of urgency, because South Africa is one of the leading peacekeeping missions of ASIRC in the continent of Africa. So if we are the leader in that, to do peace building and promote peace in the country and stability in Africa, then we should provide the best equipment to our soldiers. So that has become a matter of urgency and a matter of priority for this committee, and I think also for defense. The issue of, I'm looking at the categories that's given here, of G1, G2, G3, G4, GT, all the Gs. If this is such a long list of Gs, then we got a big problem. Three-quarter fit soldiers are there fit, and the rest. And then the question may be asked, what is the ratio in terms of gender regarding that inability to be able to perform or be deployed? What is the gender ratio in that regard? The issue of the Ks are even more deplorable. K1 only works. The rest are all suffering from some disease or some health problem. If you're K4, you're not supposed to be, you may even be medically boarded because it's tertiary and specialized health care that you need. So the person is at a very high risk. So what are the actual figures for the different Ks and different Gs? I understand the 65 up to 75%, but what about the other 25%? How serious are they, and what is the actual percentages for each of those Ks and Gs? I think we'd like to know and have a full report on that matter, so we know exactly the status and health of our defense. The other one, the percentages, I've looked at all the percentages. My colleague has raised that issue. And, of course, overutilization of available troops. I know that when we deploy, when we do the borders as well, South Africa works on a 1-3 cycle, and internationally other more advanced countries deal on a 1-4 cycle, which means there are four other companies on standby, and one is actually in the theater. Now, if we speak about sustainment, it means the rolling over of those companies should then be effectively managed. Why should it be so long extended when they can actually just do the turnover? You come back, you go into training, you get into the theater, you go back. Why don't we do it in that way? Why do we have to extend such periods and expose our soldiers to greater problems? I'd like some explanation clarity from defense and how this planning is actually taking place from command and control. What's happening on the ground? The other, I think, just generally, I think we'd like to see more recommendations coming through from the department and HR itself, how it wants to address the issue of transformation. And realistically, to put that on the table, although we expect the Service Commission to guide us with their proper investigations, which have been very extensive, and I think we probably have a further engagement in that regard. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Before you, Honorable Tumbi, let's take Honorable Lamine.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me start off by welcoming the report. Let me also say that at least today I'm a little bit comfortable because I can see a number of women faces, which had been my question since I started serving in this committee. And also, Chair, that is unfortunate that because we're dealing with these issues, especially that affects the promotion or transformation of women, we don't have enough time. We just give them 20 minutes. She did not know what to do. Not that she was not capable. I'm not speaking on her behalf. But if you prepare a presentation of 1 hour, you are given 20 minutes. It really disorganizes you. Chair, having said that, I am so disappointed, I must say, that my suspicion had always been correct. 22 years down the line, we have 30% of women in that department, including the lowest ranks. That's what I got from the presentation. Why? Why? What does it take to have women in this position? Because for me, women in other services, not in the troops or whatever you call them, just like any employment in any department, why don't we have women there? That is my starting point. The worst part, Chair, on the SMS is a senior management. That's my understanding. You don't have physical power, you don't need physical power, whatever. I don't know what else it needs. You have 18%. It's an embarrassment for me. Why? Can we be given reasons why? Because even from the presenter, I'm not getting a strategy, a plan, how you want to address this. If it is skills, even if they had to start from grade one, they will be having a degree by now. 22 years, grade one to grade 12 is 12 years. A degree is a 3 years or 4 years degree. But to have 18% of female is unacceptable at all for me. If it means that we have, maybe as women, have to come and assist women there in that department, I don't know what you want them to do to be promoted. Let it be so, so that we can help them. But for me, it really does not reflect that there is a willingness of promoting women in that department. By all, did you say divisions? Yeah, by all of them. I don't know why, Chairperson. I need a clear explanation. Why? What will it take women from that department to be promoted to positions? Because at the end of the day, they are the ones who are doing work for the men beneath them. Yibo labo makela benda lomsebenzi. Masikufika isikhathi promotion, promote amadoda. Why are we doing that? We have a woman in the transformation section as a chief director. How much noise do you make to make sure that other women are promoted, or you are just comfortable because now you are there yourself? It's fine, I'm there. They must see themselves how they go up, because I would want to see you fighting for these other women to be promoted. I don't know how does it feel. My question, how does it feel to sit in an organization with 18% of senior management? So embarrassing. The slide, Chair,
on, okay, the question before the slide on the health status. One will be interested to know where one appreciates the transformation, but also one will be interested to know, Guti, where are these whites? You look where they were 1994, where they are now. What happened to them? Did you employ more blacks to try to ensure that there's transformation? Did they resign? Did they retire? What happened to them? You know, trained people is very much important to know where are they and what are they doing wherever they are. As a country, it's important to know those things. Then the last matter from my side, Shepherdson, is the issue of this health status. I don't know, my colleague tried to speak to it. I don't see any status here, me. I don't know, maybe Funzeka Ngan. I only see an explanation of this G and a K, what it means. But the actual status in this slide, I don't see it. I might be missing it because I would want to see, for example, how many G1 and K1s do we have? How many G2, K1 do we have? And I mean, and all these other categories as indicated here. But I don't see those percentages. I just see the explanation of these categories, what it means. Then finally, one will want to know the GP, permanently unfit, where are they? What do you do with them? Do they retire or what happens with them? Honourable Chair, I may not wait for my responses because I've got another meeting. Those are my inputs. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Kumbi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm hard covered by my colleagues here. But I'm a little bit worried about this disciplinary bill. Why is it taking so long? And what steps did you do to least to make a follow-up to the Office of the State Law Advisor? Another thing that I want to comment on, you know, as you are South African National Defense Force, don't forget that you are a defense force. And I don't want you to be, what can I say, to be political allied. You need to be a defense force. I know there are a lot of things that a politician can tell you, but stand as defense, national defense force. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Before you, Honorable Boy, can we take Honorable Mitchell? Should be.
No, thanks, Chair. Perhaps it's important that I welcome the presentation. But I need to say that there is a political will in the department to have a better defense force, to restructure, hence the defense review. Moving in the right direction in South Africa. It is just that there are, of course, challenges that need to be addressed. Like in any society, any country, we are faced with challenges and we are there to resolve them. That is the first comment. The second comment that I want to make, I like, you know, Honorable Dlamini, she likes, you know, from the time we started in this committee, she spoke so affectionately about women, and I also want to speak about women, that it is important that women assume positions of responsibility. But you know, you don't just talk women. There are men there, and it goes with capacity. It goes, no, it's true. You don't just talk women to be elevated. What is important and very critical here, we are talking about the security of the country. You need to have capacity. You need to have the capability. The other aspect is that, and I've never said they don't, is that as you speak 18%, you speak 1%, you speak 0% of Indians and all that. It's 0% of what? How many are they in the army? So that we must talk relatively to say it's 1% of what? You see, you can be one and there are 10 men. Does it necessarily mean that that woman now must be promoted because she's one and you say you want 10%? Where are you going to get the 10%? Because it's 1%, it will remain one because she's one. You understand? My argument is that it is a percentage of what? Because at the moment we are just giving percentages. We don't know what is that percentage. It's a percentage of what? But the other aspect that I think I must address, which is very critical, comrade, honorable Dlamini, is that we do respect all our invitees to committees.
You respect through me, Chief.
Yes, Chairperson. And then the fact that, Chair, you are there to control the meeting and to allocate. Now, when you say 20 minutes, it is because you want people to talk to the presentation. We can all read. You must talk to the presentation.
Then we have order.
Yeah. You must talk to the presentation and not read because we can all read. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I wanted Honorable Boy to close. And now, Honorable Mhlanga, were you not sure whether you were going to ask a question? I see your hand.
No, thanks, Chair. I just wanted to clear one thing. It's not a question, Chair. It's just to clear one thing, that in terms of our norms as this committee and the defense itself, we don't deploy soldiers if they're not combat ready. Our deployment drill informs us that when we deploy, we must follow the deployment drills. Our soldiers must be well combat for a mission that they are given. I just wanted to clear the chat.
Thank you. Honorable Boy.
Chairperson, you know we must welcome this progress. Progress in a sense that, you see, Honorable Isao and myself, we have engaged. He's correct, that member from the TA, to say maybe he's not familiar with the good progress that is made by the DA, by the department, because he's not a regular exposed to how the defense committee. If you can just handle yourself, ma'am, you know, if you behave in this way, you are really diminishing the stature of the committee. Just handle yourself. Give us an opportunity to talk to issues. Because they are trying to assist. Because they are affecting all of us. So what I'm saying, Chairperson, is that you see, if you deal with the defense review, if you deal with issues of finance, if you had listened to the MTPPS, if you realign all those things, and the plea of the finance minister, you suddenly realize the importance of the work that has been done by the defense in realigning itself with a lot of challenges. You see, even what the member is raising in terms of policy, in how they incrementally approach the issue of genderizing the defense force, I'm clear in my mind and out of experience that it's not an overnight activity of how they are trying to do this type of work. It's a lot of work, and they're doing it quite correctly. You see, because since 1994, they find a lot of men inside the department, and they have done a lot of progress. And they're doing it against an environment where men think that they're the sole representative of the defense force, and they're only the ones that have got the strength. But with the progress I'm listening to, I see a lot of progress, Chairperson. And given that the defense review itself
has now come up with a new way of approaching all these policy matters. For me, there is progress, Chairperson. Without defending the Defense Force, I think they are doing a lot against an environment. Because if you deploy in Africa, the situations are totally different, and they are able to handle that particular development. So it's in our interest as policymakers to look at that environment and encourage the department in the work they're beginning to do. Give them a lot of support. They're doing it against an environment where they don't get, I mean, ISAL should be knowing by now that there is no money that has been promised. Even if you look at the MTPPS yesterday, there isn't money that is being given even for the defense review. So the Defense Force is working against that type of an environment. They work against the reality that the peacekeeping mission, the money that they spend there, doesn't come back to them. And we should not always forget those type of progresses that they are making, that there is no funding for the Defense Force at this particular moment. Just to advise the member from the DA that he should be conscious about the imbalance between the NA and the National Council of Provinces. And it's not the responsibility of the Defense Force to want to not to give them information, but in the Joint Standing Committee governed by totally different rules in Parliament, you would only get information when you come to the Joint Standing Committee of Defense there. We won't get it anywhere else. And it's not the department's problem. It's our rules that are governing. And we must, as honorable members, deal with ourselves. If we have got issues of how and how many times the Joint Standing Committee is doing it, to raise that issue with us as politicians. It's got nothing to do with the officials. It's our responsibility. And you should. Yes, you will complain because you don't understand the running of Parliament. I'm going to help you. You should be able to engage us through that particular role. You see, that how do we deal with the Joint Standing Committee of Defense? There is a standing committee, you must deal with it, but you don't put that responsibility on officials. So I'm just cautioning on that, Chairperson, that we should always, as honorable members, know when policy is being violated. We should always know when rules are being violated of the institution. But you don't push officials to feel guilty as if they are the ones that are supposed to do these things. For me, out of the 20 years, there's a lot of good progress that they've made at this particular division within the Defense Force. And we need continuously to capacitate them. And capacitate them means funding. And that's a central point that we must finally come to, that how much does it cost us to look after the disabilities, and how much does it cost us to bring women into the scene? If you can just answer that few questions, man, I'll be fine. But overall, we appreciate your presentation. It's been very transparent. It's been very good to be able to take us forward as we deal with the environment of the defense review. But thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Boy. General, before you give answers on the issue of this broad health status, because it is not clear, can we be given a written detailed answer, the one that was raised by Honorable Usayo and followed up by Honorable Dlamini. If we can have details on that slide of this health status and medical classification, so that we'll be at least able to have a picture as to what is happening. Thank you. Can we get answers? Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. There's been a lot of questions, but I'll try to summarize, taking into consideration maybe, Chair, I don't know how much time do we have, but I'm going to try my level best to be on spot. The first question was about the classification of the document secret. It should be taken note that all documents of the Defense Force are classified. They are classified into the following. Maybe a document is classified into restricted. Those are the normal office documents, and the confidential classification, and then top secret. Now, this information that we are providing you here is classified as secret, because it's information that can go into the hands of anybody outside this venue here. And if you are trained in a military, like myself, a general, for instance, it is always said by those who study wars that the generals who win a war are those who have information. So when you have information about your enemy, it doesn't matter what type of information, then you already have won 50% of the battle. So the information that we provided to you about our six soldiers, our statistics, and all those things is valuable information to somebody else who needs that. I won't go very much on that. I think it suffices just to explain why we classify our documents in the Defense Force. There was also the question about the percentage of deployment. I think it refers to that slide there, because currently, if you look at this health status of the soldiers, because really, I mean, it's totally unacceptable statistics there, because we are currently lying at 75%.
General, can you hold on a minute?
Chairperson, sorry, if I may just come in there. My question was not why it is classified as secret. My question was, why was the committee not informed that this document is secret? Because there's media over here. So your enemy has just won 50% of the battle, according to you. This information is classified as secret. We were not advised that it's classified as secret. And that's why there's media over here. So the newspapers already have this information. That was the issue, not why you classify them. I know why certain documents are classified as secret. My question is, why was this committee not advised so that the media can be advised accordingly as well? They're here, and they're going to publish it, and that's good and well.
Okay, you know, I really don't want to... can we hear the point of order from...
You see, the member must be conscious about what are the rules saying in versus joint committees and transparency in parliament. He can't put that responsibility on the Defense Force. He's supposed to have read the rules. And then he must go. You can't be answering, Chair. I mean, if you want me to.
Can we have order?
Yeah.
Please.
You see, Chairperson, that's why the committee has been allowed to be a committee that is different from the rest of the other committee, the Davidson, I mean, Defense Committee. And if ever you have allowed the media, why do you blame the department? You are the chairperson of the committee. You're supposed to raise that responsibility with us as honorable members. If you wanted a closed meeting, you're supposed to have objected from the start of the meeting. The general is correct in how he's explaining what that secrecy means in terms of military. If we have not followed it as honorable members, tomorrow you are going to take you to court and say you were being dishonest. You have not followed the rules of parliament. Can you stop this thing?
The order is sustained. I think we'll deal with this matter, Honorable Michalakis, as members of parliament. No, it's okay. It's okay. Can you continue, General?
Thank you, Chair. The second question was the percentage level of deployment, which currently, according to the slide there, we're currently lying at 75% readiness. Unfortunately, the South African National Defense Force is part of the South African society that is also sick. Some soldiers are sick, and that one, we must just admit it. And from 1994, we have inherited soldiers from different non-statutory angles, from the liberation movements, from the TVVC states. And those old soldiers that are old today, Chair. And honorable members, and they need to be changed, and some of them must go on pension. That is why we're talking about arresting the decline in the current defense review, because our defense force has suddenly become old and unfit
after 22 years of this democracy. And the third question, Chair, was referred to our recruitment strategy. Why are we not recruiting the right people and the best people? Yes, I accept the criticisms there, but I mean, we are not that perfect. We try to recruit as much as we can in terms of the best, but we have to train people, because people in the defense force, in order to reach the best and the levels of competency. I'm sure you even saw today, I think the other honorable member there, the lady, but she just left, was criticizing our presentation here and the levels of confidence from the presenter and all those things. Maybe sometimes, well, people are overwhelmed when they come to this committee, because what we see on TV, maybe people think that they are going to be grinded and grilled here, and then the next thing when they start presenting, they start fumbling. But that's a human element. But I think she started to regain her confidence as she was presenting. I thought the members of the committee also saw that. But human beings are not perfect. I can assure you that. So we tried our level best to recruit the best and then to train people so that they reach acceptable levels of competency within the defense force. And then the member also asked a further breakdown on the statistics to division. I think that member is correct, because these statistics can be very confusing to you people who are not in the defense force. We can follow them, Chair, easily, but I'm apologizing on our behalf there. I think next time, Chair, that request will be made, will be done. We will present them also in the form of divisions, that breakdown, so that the statistics and the numbers are accurate, not really like the other honorable members say. The percentages can be very misleading. It's percentage of what? Because if you have got one position, for instance, what actually do you mean by 1%? Because only need one person there. The president is one. You don't have any percentage in the president of this country. If it's one, it's 100%. So you do not have a 45% of a human being. There is no half human being. So these are some of the issues with statistics, Chair, but we will correct this as we present to you next time. And then the other member was, okay, I like that one. At least we got a mark there, that the appointment of the military the judges. I hope that will improve the situation, even though the issue of the military discipline bill is still an issue, honorable member. Because as long as our present constitutional dispensation in this country, because, you see, our constitution gives everybody rights now, even soldiers rights. You can't just stand there like the old generals and start ordering soldiers up and down, and so they tell you about their rights. So there needs to be a line drawn there in terms of discipline, because the soldier is supposed to accept orders. But if our constitutional dispensation and democracy goes to the defense force, then, yeah, I don't think we'll have soldiers who will be forced to fight and protect this country. So we need that military discipline bill. There is an issue which I think is also very valid from the honorable member. This 6 months to 12 months deployment, it's a long time. And I think the presenter also explained that it has implications of affecting the family fabric. Because if somebody is without his wife and children for 12 months, I don't know what is going to happen in that house. Divorces would take place, displacements, indiscipline of the kids, because the father is not there. And all sorts of things. These are the things that our soldiers experience. But unfortunately, honorable members, the 12-month issue, initially we used to deploy for 6 months. But the United Nations said, no, it must be the whole year. And we are battling with that even now. We are still having negotiations with the United Nations. Remember, they control the purse. They pay according to their guidelines and principles. So that's an issue between us and the United Nations, that one. The Defense Force Service Commission, the annual report, yes, I accept that. Yesterday we had a conference of the Defense Service Commission. General Olomisa, as part of the commissioners, was there. Yes, I accept their report. Sometimes it's very critical. They
they visit our bases and pick up problems and certain unacceptable conditions at our military bases. We are going to work on those reports, Chair. We are not a holy cow. Like you know, our facilities are deteriorated and also discipline has deteriorated to a certain extent in the defense force. Such that sometimes we seem to be harboring criminals sometimes who are involved in crimes and syndicates. But sometimes we do succeed in apprehending them and so on. This is just also part of the ills of our society. Soldiers deployed at length within high-risk areas with inadequate equipment. That one, honorable members, talks to the current budget constraints and the budget cuts which we are all experiencing as government departments. We just heard Minister Pravin Gordhan in this week, the day before yesterday, on the budget speech. There was nothing said about the Department of Defense. Yes, we know the government has got certain priorities other than the defense currently now, fees must fall and all these things. He has given $17 billion to the students to try to cap this problem. So we understand that as the Department of Defense. But also you should understand that while we accept that those cuts, it results into things like this, risking our soldiers' lives, putting them in areas like the DRC, like the Sudan, where they meet rebels with superior power, and we do not have money or budget to meet fire with those people. The G1K1 principle, I think, really it's quite confusing, that category. I think, Chair, you spoke about it, that we must actually write a document which we must explain to the committee exactly what is this G1K1, G2K3, and all those things, man. It will be a whole day. I will pass that one. The 1-in-3 deployment and rotational principle, you spoke about it, honorable member. Yes, that is actually a universal standard that is practiced by militaries. When you deploy a unit in military, there must be 3 units on standby. Because what happens in front when fires start, you must be able to reinforce and you must be able to put in reserves and so on. So it's like the military works like a factory. You know, when the other machine stops, the other machine must be able to start working. There is no time where if you're going to entertain a situation in production now, where machine stops and then the whole production stops, and it becomes a problem economically. It's the same as in war and in operations. Your machinery and your planning must move, and it must complement each other. The promotion and the representation of women, the honorable member has left there, but I think the other honorable member has answered that question very, very, very well. I like it. I thought he was the general. I don't see him now. So I'm not going to waste my time, really. I think that issue was driven at home by the principal, in fact. It's not a question, really, of tokenism or what. We have to promote. We cannot promote, like Minister Mbalula says, mediocrity. But I don't think this committee would like to entertain those things. But we promote people because of their competencies. And it must not be because of their gender or their color, because you are white or you are colored or you are Indian or you are woman or you are what, but it must be because you are competent to do so. I think that principles, we all agree with that one. What happened to the whites who dominated the defense force? That was a very interesting question. If you look at the evolution of the Defense Force since 1994, the first principle was to make the Defense Force all-inclusive because it was purely white during apartheid. Now, when we started employing those government imperatives of transforming the Defense Force, some whites felt frustrated and they left the Defense Force, many of them. Well, those that are dedicated are still with us. As you can see, there are still some of them with us today. Unfortunately, that is an issue that I cannot really, honorable member, answer, but it is just part of the evolution and the democratization and playing the level fields in this country. which is a government imperative. In fact, we are required by this committee to enforce those demographic as we presented them. Sometimes you ask us, why so many women are not promoted? Why there is no white there? But it's the same ball game there. So white, some of the whites, they felt frustrated that I think they left because they have competencies maybe more than the other races. And maybe they chose to pursue their careers elsewhere. And I cannot dwell much on this issue as such. We spoke about the actual health status, this G1, K1 principle. The second last question was the GP. What do we do with GPs? A person who's classified as a GP and Defence Force is a person who's permanently unfit. And those people, we immediately put them on a medical board where they must be medically boarded and be discharged. Because they are no longer used to us, unfortunately, and that is not discrimination. The disciplinary bill, we spoke about it, and why is it is taking so long? I think I'm not the one who's qualified to answer that question. I'm not legally qualified. But I know that legal processes in this country are long drawn. Even I don't know how long it takes for one bill in Parliament here to be passed, passing through all the nitty-gritty and the legal test. And so on. I think it's the same thing that is delaying us here. But as my colleague, General Nodola, requested you as member of, honorable members of the committee, if you can help us to speed up that process so that we can get this disciplinary bill, so that we can discipline these unruly elements within ourselves, because we are beginning also to be infested by criminals in the Defence Force. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, General. Are there any addition in your team, if there are? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I would like to add on what General Ngeni has said, in as far as it was required, as proper studies or research on long-term deployment. I must say, from as Director of Social Work, we've already started on that research. We do have information on the impact of 6 months deployment, not on members as well as their families. So we started with about a year ago, when the deployment was now extended to 1 year. We've already started with that research on the impact or effects of 1 year deployment on members as well as their families. So what you are intending to do is also look at longitudinal as well as comparative analysis of the 6 months and the 1 year deployment. Already, we have some results, but which unfortunately cannot at this stage publicize, but we do have, or we have already started with that, because separation from families long-term leads to various things. One of them is the issue of discipline, which contributes into that, and the issue of post-traumatic stress disorders for members and their families. As we deploy members, it was one of the issues also is on repeat as well as repeated deployment, like that slide, that bullet, the over-utilization of available troops has massive social implications, yes, not only on the members but their families as well. So this research also is incorporating that, as well as also benchmarking with other countries like the U.S. And other countries in Africa as we're deploying in Africa, to make sure that we have resilience programs to make our members resilient and decrease vulnerability, especially in the mission area, as well as families, because there are a lot of interesting facts that we have on the six-month deployment that impacts on the families. Like currently, we are having a strategy, because as we rejuvenate the Defence Force, obviously you are deploying people who have young families, teenagers, and while we are currently crafting an active parenting of teenagers strategy as well as empowerment programs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. General, you will follow, sir. I thought your hand was up.
Thank you, sir. I wanted to speak on the sexual harassment and sexual abuse. As we can recall...
can you speak to the mic?
As you can recall, mid this year, there were about 40 troops that were 40 to 50 troops that were returned from the deployment area. The Defense Force takes sexual harassment and exploitation and abuse seriously. In my environment, we have a section that has been established to ensure that we each and every deploying soldier understands exactly, and he is trained on sexual harassment and abuse, that he understands the implications of the committing such crimes in the deployment area. The very same lectures are done, training is done even into the internally deployed members, because we have members in the borders. So we go around and train them not to, and explain to them the implication of the UN, especially for those ones who are deployed outside. And then so far, those members that were returned have been disciplined. Some of them are no longer in the Defense Force. Thank you.
What I wanted to add to what the Chief has explained is an issue of an exit mechanism. I'll call it an exit mechanism in terms of you questioned the non-application of MEM. And we must all remember that MEM is a situation where there should be funds for that mechanism. And currently, when the Defense Force is underfunded, it is actually really difficult for the Chief of the SANDF to be able to apply that. I understand that the department, HR, is also trying to persuade through this committee as well as the defense review to ensure that we get funding for that. And therefore, that is why it seems like MEM is not moving as fast as some people or you might have expected. The other issue I wanted to address is the issue of whether do we act. The chief explained that the actual protection of our members on deployment. It must also be realized that the missions themselves, if we take Darfur, there are some equipment that you would not deploy as per the arrangements of the UN or the AU. I'll make an example of the Roy Falk. It took us so long that we had that capability on the ground, and we have seen what it has done. Because I'm knowledgeable in the issues of Darfur, we had an anti-tank weapon, FT-5, that the government of Sudan and the AU did not allow us to use. And we had that weapon, which is superior on the ground, but we could not use that weapon. Therefore, when members are looking in such things, there are issues like that where we are prevented by the conditions on these deployment areas. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General. Honorable members, are there any follow-up questions? Honorable Seu and Honorable Kamet, they will follow. Those will be the last two hands. Thank you. Over to you, Honorable Mfundisi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, we'd just like to know the status when the HIV/AIDS affected individuals in the defense. There are special policies and programs that is being that needs to be conducted. And also in the interest, I mean, those who are people that, of course, disclose, and the defense has a responsibility to, of course, do the necessary training, awareness, workshopping, etc., for those particular individuals, for them to understand clearly. And the unfortunate part is the defense cannot be discriminated in any way when people are deployed and they're ready to go on missions. But there needs to be also some awareness on a constant basis at the deployment camps that individuals that are affected, that we speak in general about matters, but try to encourage people not to get involved with the local communities. And also the fact that because it extended deployment, it does create a problem. And those are natural urges, and people vent in different ways, and it creates a problem. So that's the one issue. The other one is that $670 million was allocated now with the adjustments budget to the landward defense. So that was allocated. The other one is, I know that in the U.S. and some of the other troops, they were using also some medication because of extended deployments. I'm not sure if South African defense is using any medication for troops on the ground to avert certain things. But I know it's used by some other international armies that go out as well. The issue of the reserves, I know that the reserves, that we deploy the reserves to the borders, we've increased that now from the defense side. The issue is that also reserves are deployed on the international or continental peace missions. And the challenge there, again, is the age. The average age is about 42. So we're sitting with a serious problem of calling upon reserves to stand in and support the defense when that age, average age, has now increased compared to the 32 of the defense. So there's a serious challenge of aged troops. And if we don't address it, it only becomes worse day by day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Lucille. Honorable Kamete?
Thanks, Chair. I've been listening, Chair, with so much anticipation and appreciation of the presentation and the responses. Chair, the main issue why as a committee wanted this issue, this presentation, is really the issue of transformation. And we want to be serious and practical about it. In future, I think when the department comes back, we'd want them to address the issue of transformation in terms of equality and in terms of equity, because these are two issues. It's not a matter of numbers. You know, I'll give General Niembe after this meeting something that will show the difference of the two. So these issues are really sensitive, that after 22 years, we must be able to see equality and equity. You know, the mere fact that we're asking about possibilities and opportunities for females, it's not just we're asking, you know, and people with disabilities. It's the policy of government to see that we're really achieving these things. I know at one stage we got a report about the ranks. I can't remember which general presented that. Of all the ranks, up to the top ranks, that showed us that we are not moving as we are supposed to move according to ranks, more especially from colonel. That rank seems to be a huge challenge. We're not taking up more young people for certain groups and so on. So we want, next time when you present, that you give us these things per table, that, you know, on equality, it's different. You know, everybody gets an equal opportunity. But on equity, that you give those that were disadvantaged a better option, a better position to advance. So I didn't hear this in this presentation that, you know, we have taken so many young females, so many people with their, and we have advanced them to equity status so that they reach that level in future. So in future, can you please have that? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Boy.
Chairperson, I don't want to be long, but I just wanted to sensitize the committee that, you know, this thing of the discipline bill is an ongoing process. It's going to be ongoing even now. Because initially we were trying to address our own conditions. Now, you see, when you deal with the peacekeeping missions and the global picture that is taking place, yes,
others don't have progressive policies within the African continent and within the UN. And it's our responsibility, which we are not going to shy away as lawmakers, to say that we'd have to make that bill to be able to answer the global picture and the African continent problems that are there. So that when our deployments are taking place, we do accommodate that there will be certain disciplinary actions that are happening. I'll even indicate that yesterday, the withdrawal of the South African government from the ICC, primarily it is about the concern about the peacekeeping missions and the way we're coming across, you see, because we do have at the policy level an African agenda. So this is going to impact on the bill itself. You see, it's not going to be easy for us to push it because the subjective conditions in the defense force. But at the policy level, we must address the politics and the agenda of government at a global picture, that what is it that we are expecting out of the African continent and the hopes of the other African leaders on the defense force to being able to intervene. As you go to Sudan, we understand the material condition, but our policies must talk to those realities. And what really, that's what really stalls the bill itself. And it will be upon the officials not to run against the Constitution. You do that, you violate your oath, you're out of the force. That one we don't compromise about. We don't care whoever it is. But that reality, that this is a constitutional state, and we should be able to defend the constitutionalism of our processes. And that's where that bill is. That's why it's been coming on for a very long time. Because we know the reality that it's not easy to adjust. It's correct for the general to quote how militaries are behaving, but you're talking also about militaries that have been started in 1820, doesn't have any policy about gender. We have to genderize this thing. We have to deal with it. We have to deal with discipline in a totally different context. And so government is conscious about that, and it has to defend those policies. It's not because we don't want the defense force. It's not because we're not aware that there are syndicates. But generals must be so innovative and readjust and face the reality that we have to defend our democracy, and that democracy is defended on the basis of its own constitution. We're not aware. We've been aware for a very long time that there are quite a lot of challenges within the defense force. But generals will have to instill discipline in a different form so that they can be able to get the things they want. But to argue against the constitution would be detrimental to our own society. And that's what we want to protect ourselves from. That we live a legacy, that this is a constitutional state, and a constitutional state makes all of us happy people. The right of people must be defended. Apartheid didn't defend them, and we have to defend them, and it's in the constitution. In the Bill of Rights, we can't do differently for the defense force. We just want to caution about that comment. Chairperson.
Siyabulela, honorable boy. The last piece.
Yeah, one important, I'm sorry, Chair, that I forgot. We are concerned and worried about transformation in the Air Force. Now, within two budgets that were presented by the Minister, we've raised this issue sharply, and there's just no movement. So we just want to record that we are concerned about transformation in the Air Force. Next time, we would need, you know, a proper presentation on what's to be done. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I just want to comment about one thing that we also requested to the department, of which I think it resides with you, General, the issue of the exit strategy. You know, has it been developed? What is happening? We'll be glad if we can get answers around that. Not now, but in the near future. When you actually, you can send us a written a response also on the issues of exit strategy. When you respond. About these health issues. Thank you. Any last comment and in answering these two questions, because the one of Honorable Gamed and Honorable Mfundis were questions and concerns. Can you respond on that so that we close?
Yeah, Chair, I'm going to be very short, because the first question is a very confidential question on the health status of people. We don't discuss the health status of people, especially when it comes to HIV. I think the General Moreme next to me, she comes from the medical health services. These people who are wearing the maroon things, they are medics, so they know these principles. So I don't want to dwell, but if you want to say anything, Moreme, to the chair on that, yeah, but don't be long. Just explain the principle with regard to HIV and the restrictions with the confidentiality of health status of people. And then, Chair, before you do that, then, Chair, your question, in fact, very important, this issue, which you just mentioned on the question of the exit strategy. Briefly, the issue of the exit strategy that we already have, we are in discussion right now with National Treasury. It also, you will recall that it also involves the money, the budget, because you don't just throw people on the streets. You've got to pay them. If you retrench, well, we don't use the terminology retrenching in the Defense Force. That is the labor relations terminology. We exit people after they have served, and then we have to honor them after they have served, so that we don't throw them. We are working on that, Chair. To be short, we will give you that document that you required as to what is the status currently with it. Thank you, Andama.
Thank you, General. I am going to be very brief. The South African Military Health Services, I always boast that I've got two ministers, the Minister of Health and the Defense Minister. So our policy, they're very much in line with the Department of Health. As all as we know that it's not long that he has, in the 1st of September, announced here in the Parliament to be working in line with the WHO when it comes to the prevention. There are some other programs which they were done outside, and again, the SNDF, our soldiers, they also belong to the community. So it's in line with everything which the Department of Health does, and we also follow the suit. Whatever the Minister of Health announced, that this is the way forward, how are we going to be doing all these programs? Even us, the test and treat, as he announced it, the 1st of September, according to the WHO. We are in the process. As you know, that we are lacking a lot with the budget, but the testing, it has started. What is this test and treat? Despite of the CD4 count, now we are treating. We don't wait for the CD4 count, as the WHO was saying that you must wait to a certain stage of the CD4 count. So once you are tested and found to be in that state, we start the treatment. Although we still do the CD4 and the viral load. And again, we are also doing the 1990 strategy, which all of you here for sure you are aware of it. It is happening in the SNDF. So the 90, we need to know all of them. We need to treat all of them. We need to make sure the viral load is very much depressed. And also that PrEP, the pre-exposure, it is also in our guidelines and in our policies.
So whenever we have, before the PrEP, it's the minister only and started with the young, with the youth, that to prevent themselves. We are in the process that we must also introduce it, since we are deploying our young soldiers, those who are negative. We have to test them and give them that pre-exposure treatment. We still have programs of prevention, because it's one of the prevention. They must still use condoms. And we have for the males the VMMC, which is voluntary medical male circumcision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we need to close the meeting. I don't expect any more hands, unfortunately, because as a committee we still have other businesses to deal with. For the department, I would like to say thank you. Have a lovely weekend. Travel safe home. Ms. Patin Jengame, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Can the members remain? Honorable members, can we've got a letter. Can the media now excuse us? Oh, okay. Honorable Kamete.